your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The Secret Truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. On the line from Bristol, England, is Tony Gosling. Welcome back to our program, Tony.
Hi, George. Well, I'm putting my hands out of the chilly window, but I can feel the warmth from the fire of the burning police vehicle.
Oh, my gosh, man.
It's what we've got in Bristol. I mean, Bristol's a sort of traditional city of protests. We've got quite a strong anarchist contingent. And they are, I think, they've decided that this whole thing about making trespass a criminal offence is the last straw. You know, and they've decided that they're going to literally attack the state. That is to say, attack the police. And make sure that the police are absolutely clear that if they want to go there with criminalizing trespass, then it's going to be, you know, virtually a civil war here.
Yeah, boy, it looks like that. I'm watching it on Rupley right now. And they've got about nine, let's see, 8 police vans that are in the video frame right now. And they've got a kettle. They probably have about 100 people kettled in a half a block right there in, off to the side of Taka Taka restaurant.
That's right. Look at the city centre of Bristol here. Now, you know, this is the main police station in the city centre that's been the focus of the protest. We've had something like 4,000 or 5,000 out on the streets earlier today. Following on the back of a massive protest in London yesterday, on Saturday. So, you know, and then there's another protest due on Tuesday. What's happened is the Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who, by the way, was thrown out of her previous position because of a secret trip that she'd done to Israel that she didn't tell anybody about, where she was negotiating with Netanyahu. And now she's back in a job, a little bit like Peter Mandelson. He was a right-wing Labour guy, very close to Rothschilds and Tony Blair, who he kept doing naughty things, getting found out and thrown out of his position and then coming back. And there's only a limited amount of time you can do that. But what Priti Patel is doing with this new, it's called the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, is to alter the law in an enormous fashion to do particularly with the right of gypsies and travellers. We've got a lot of people living in vehicles here because of the housing crisis and obviously the traditional gypsies too and Romanies, but also curtailing the right to protest. So you're not allowed to raise your voice during a protest. You're only allowed to hold a protest from a certain time, one time to another time. Otherwise, you will be jailed. Now, I think, you know, what the Bristol anarchists today have decided to do, and I would, you know, say fair play to them, this is a completely legitimate tactic, is to say, well, if you're going to criminalize an entire part of the population, that is to say the poorest part, then that poorest part, symbolized by us, is going to take this as a serious fight and fight back literally to whatever means necessary, including potentially, you know, burning police vehicles, attacking police buildings and this sort of thing. So I think we're seeing a concerted attempt. I mean, if you go back to the 1800s, there was a whole part of Bristol which was actually burnt down in riots, part of Queen's Square, one of the beautiful Edwardian squares in the city. And so the Bristolians, and I think, you know, obviously it's a different contingent there now, are a part of the British scene that are one of them sort of at the forefront, I suppose, of kicking back against draconian laws. And if you're going to take the poorest people in society who are living in vehicles and squatters, these sorts of people who are just trying to survive, rather than sleeping on the streets, they've managed to find somewhere to live, and you're going to target them with new laws, then I'm afraid this is bound to happen. In a way, it's bound to happen, and Bristol, I guess, is at the forefront of it, George, really.
Yeah, it looks like civil unrest is going to increase, you know, if they keep pushing those laws, you know.
Yeah, well, because the protest on in London yesterday, which is difficult to know the numbers, possibly 50, 100,000 in London, that was about the lockdown. So it was very focused on that. This is a different type of protest. Obviously, they are not allowed at the moment. Well, I say obviously, but there is supposed to be no protests at all. The police issued a statement yesterday saying nobody should go to this protest today. But you know, we've had thousands of people out on the Bristol streets today saying that they are absolutely fed up with this government. And since they're not getting anywhere through the ballot box, then they're obviously turning it into a sort of almost as a mini revolutionary uprising. And that's because the system isn't doing its job, George, because, you know, we've had a system since World War II, a settlement really, which has said that the state will tax the rich and make sure that the poor have got the basics. Well, the poor now have got very little in the way of housing. The housing is very overpriced, and there are tens of thousands just in Bristol that don't have any housing at all. And so they're looking at the government and they're saying, well, actually, this is not our government, and these are not our police, and we're actually at war with them. So the Priti Patel has set off here something which could get far, far worse. And I would hope that the police will be seeing sense. They'll be sending a very strong signal to the Home Office and to the Cabinet next week to say, this we do not want. We don't want these kinds of permanent confrontations with the societies marginalised in Britain, and hopefully they'll rein back on this bill. By the way, the whole thing of criminalising trespass is never happened in Britain. We've had itinerants, you know, the gypsies and the travellers, ever since the world began. And they've only now just really got to the stage where, I know you have criminal trespass in the United States, but we've never had it in Britain. And so this is totally unprecedented what they're trying to do to make these people in Bristol alone. You've got, you know, at least 15,000-20,000 people living like this, one sort or in one way or another, either in vehicles or squatting or this sort of thing. And Bristol is a big, big centre for these kinds of people that live on the margins of society, in vehicles, etc., because of the festival scene. Now, the festival scene is mostly concentrated in the southwest of England. We have, throughout the summer, we have something like 30 or 40 major festivals with tens of thousands of people attending. And these people who live in Bristol basically run and service those festivals. So they're running things like, you know, things like the first aid at the festivals, things like kitchens, cafes, shops, clothes shops, doing things like organising the toilets and this sort of thing. And so Bristol's a place where these people basically live, and then they spend most of the summer on the road. As happened in the 2020 summer with the COVID pandemic, most of those people weren't doing anything, so they had to stay in the city. And so there's been a bit of a clampdown on them anyway by the mayor, who's a Labour mayor, but actually he's really a Blairite Labour mayor. And so what they've done, I think, is absolutely ridiculous and irresponsible to try and criminalise these people who they have, by these COVID measures, they have stopped them having a livelihood, George. So that's it in a nutshell, and that's why the people are getting angry. I think it's Antifa. There's also probably going to be in there some agent provocateurs. In most of these big demonstrations, particularly to do with the anarchists, you'll find police in there trying to actually make things worse than they even need to be. But the thing is that they've lit the blue touch paper with this law that Priti Patel is trying to pass. And even the Conservative Party contingent itself is beginning to oppose the bill, saying, well, look, you know, you can't stop people's right to protest. You know, gypsies, etc., have got to have rights in international law and in international human rights law. So there's a perfect storm coming. The question is, will the government realise that if they try and ram this new Act of Parliament through, the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill through, without the correct amendments, then they could have a civil war on their hands here. And I'm not kidding when I say that in Britain, because there's so many people, we're probably talking across the country at least 100,000 living in this way. And if you're going to criminalise those 100,000 people, you're also trying to criminalise probably what are the most radical, the most... All right, don't worry, I'm back again now.
Okay, the people that I watched this afternoon on some roughly during the daytime protest period, they were young people, but they looked like they were pretty clean cut, group of people, you know? It didn't look like appear to me that there were many Antifa or any of the black, black bloc people in there. There were some anarchists with flags, but not nearly at the level that we've seen the protest here with Antifa and anarchy and anarchists and stuff. So the whole crowd that I looked at today was your middle class people, working class, college mixed in, and it looked like a pretty good group of people overall.
Yeah, well, the anarchists always come out at night when the sun goes down.
Right,
the anarchists like to do their thing. But, you know, we've got something like 100,000 people living on these traveller sites, etc. in Britain, whether they're squatting or whether they're in marginal accommodation. And they are the most radical people in the country. They're the most free thinking, independent minded, etc. And so what you've got is those are the ones who they're targeting with this Act of Parliament. And so those are the ones who are coming out on the streets. But of course, there's lots and lots of people as well, like myself. I'm an ex-squatter who are not living like that, but they have a great deal of sympathy. So you will see those people coming out too. And this is the idiocy of the government's, what the government's been doing is you have an anarchist protest, and it isn't just an anarchist protest, but it's a lot of people out on the streets today in Bristol on this particular subject. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
There's some funny noises coming through, George.
Yeah, somebody was knocking on my door, you know.
Okay, all right. So, all right.
I'm
so,
back in my office. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a lot of people who have sympathy with this. So, what happens is, they will see, you know what they see? They will see this protest going on and they will come out on the streets as well. They'll join in because there is a traditional of protest. But I think, you know, Priti Patel, what she's done with this new bill is unbelievable, really, to encourage more and more people to come out onto the streets. So what's the point of she bringing everybody together against the government by having this particular Act of Parliament? It's really, George, a provocation. The idea that you're going to criminalise the most radical section of the community. It's almost an attempt at civil war.
Yeah, are they living in tents during the wintertime around on the outskirts of or in parks or what?
Okay, so I'd say there's something like 1,000 or so people living, not in tents, no. There are a lot of people living in vehicles, George. Some of them do they're travellers and they're part of the festival scene. But there's also a lot of people who are ex-travellers, ex-squatters. Bristol is really a centre for this, you know. So if you were to look at all the cities in the country where there's most people living in vehicles, Bristol is probably one of them. I mean, we've got certainly, you know, if you just go up to the Bristol Downs in the evening, you'll see arriving something like at least 50 vehicles with people living in, plus people sleeping in their cars. So you've got a mixture of people who are there by choice as a traveller because they're part of the festival scene. But you've also got an increasing number of people who cannot afford the rent, and so they've had to move into a vehicle literally to keep a roof over their head. Probably about 50-50, but the amount of people who are homeless and have bought a vehicle to keep themselves dry is growing all the time because of the austerity financial crisis. But I think, you know, what you've got here is a globalist Bilderberg elite. And by the way, we might say something about the Bilderbergers because they've disappeared completely, haven't they?
Because of the COVID-19, see?
Nothing to do with that, George. It's because their plan is now rolling out. And, of course, they've got no need to come out into the public. Their business of coming into public, which was always, of course, they were hiding when they were doing it, was in order to recruit new politicians into their system. Now, I would suggest they've done that job. They've got lots of their puppet politicians in all the right places, so they don't need to have Bilderberg anymore. What they're doing is they're doing everything that they used to do, but they're doing it from behind closed doors, you know, behind the scenes. Their plan is a World War III between Iran and Israel, including obviously trying to drag in the Americans, the Russians and the Chinese. But it's also, of course, the COVID police state clampdown. That is to say, bringing in China-style surveillance on the whole of the Western world, and also trying to stop the free press. And that's what we'll be watching tonight, you know, on our television screen.
Right.
But, you know, there's still a bit of free press out there, George, thank God.
Well, there's something that's just been put up on the web just recently by American Intelligence Media, AIM, and they put out quite a bit on the Pilgrim Society. And they're tying it into Lenin and all that in the early 1900s in London.
Oh, yeah.
So it's very interesting what they put up.
A lot of this analysis, you're right, this analysis is very important. But I think we've also got to keep fixed on some of the key figures, like Henry Kissinger. I'm amazed that he can get away without these constant protests from around the world and the United States outside the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York, where he lives. And I'm quite concerned because he's an old man now. He's a very powerful man. And I think he wants to see the cataclysm, whether it's World War III or whatever, before he dies. And as he's getting it nearer and nearer to the end, he's thinking, let's get this all going, because he wants to bring the whole house down.
Right. He's from Fürth, Germany, right outside of Nuremberg. That's where he was born. And but midway between Fürth and Nuremberg is the Hall of Justice, where they tried all the Nazi war criminals after the World War II.
I think that whether or not this law goes through in Britain is crucial, of course, because Britain has played a very important role in Europe and obviously with the ties to the United States.
Right.
And so everyone is watching to see, are they really going to do the undoable, which is to criminalise, you know, the most radical 5% of the British population? If they do that, it really is going to get crazy here. And nobody can pretend that this is all under the excuse of COVID,
well,
George.
How are the vaccines being accepted by the British? Are they going for the vaccines, or are they saying, hey, I don't want any part of it because of the side effects and the gene therapy type of, they're not real vaccines, or are they?
Yeah, well, which vaccine are you talking about, George? Are you talking about?
We've got Pfizer and Moderna. Are the most prevalent here. And J&J, Johnson & Johnson, is becoming to be used here, too, but it's about three different ones here.
Well, which one do you want? Do you want the one that gives you a blood clot or that gives you autoimmune disease?
I don't want any of that myself, you know. I'm not going to take any vaccine.
Just explain, for the Moderna one. Yeah. Moderna one is basically it's financed by Rishi Sunak, who's the Goldman Sachs Chancellor of the Exchequer.
So
he's making a load of money out of that. The other thing about Moderna is they've never ever brought anything to market before in the medical.
Never been a product. Yeah, that's
nothing.
Right.
Not even an aspirin.
I'll tell you what happened to Trump is they tricked him into funding the wrong people. Who developed the wrong solutions for this virus. That's what they did.
Yeah, well, what about Biden managing to say the wrong thing and getting the Russian ambassador withdrawn for the first time ever from Washington? That's devastating.
It is. And, he called Putin a killer or something like that. I mean,
well, he said
he stumbled three times going up the stairs to Air Force One the other day.
He said Putin has got no soul. Well, this is a stupid thing to say, Biden.
It's an
idiotic, especially since Putin has got, more souls in his little fingernail than Biden has in his whole body.
Well, Biden has been just a political operative his whole career in Congress out of Delaware. That's just a small state.
The
DuPonts have been dominant in Delaware for decades, the 20th century or more.
George, I noticed it was your George, I think it's Stephanopoulos on ABC.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was putting all the words into Biden's mouth. But Biden didn't even say these things. He was just nodding away and going, yeah. Is Putin a killer? Biden says, yeah. And then he says, has he got a soul? What did you say? What was happening? You know, he was egging him on the whole way through. It's like Biden can't actually think for himself and he's got to have a newsreader say, did you say this? And then he says it. So this is, for a start, as a journalist, I'd say it's completely and utterly the worst.
All these guys running our government are either Rhodes Scholars or out of Cambridge or Oxford or something, or the London School of Economics and Political Science. So today, Jake Sullivan, who is our National Security Advisor's Rhodes Scholar. So the British, y'all have been controlling America for a long time. What we've got is we've got the Pilgrim Society. We got all these different mechanisms, and the British have been on the top of ruling us for ever since the Revolution. But they did it money-wise, money power, and psychological, geopolitical, psychological stuff.
Well, I think in Britain it's the other way around. Here in Britain we think, the Americans completely dominate.
No, the crown is at the top with the Privy Council. And all that. And, that's the real power in the world.
We get dominated by the Pentagon. I mean, the big decisions that...
No. The British have used the Pentagon for surrogates to fight wars and stuff for them. That's what the Pentagon's been used for.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree, George, because, there's lots of people I speak to over here, both in politics and the military, who are saying that the massive amount of intimidation comes down the line in the world of the media. For example, we have, the BBC World Service is being strong-armed to have loads of Americans.
Yeah, but before that, in the early 1900s, was that imperial conference over there that organized all the world newspapers together within the Commonwealth. And so y'all started all mesmerizing and conditioning the world to a certain propaganda and rhetoric for decades, starting in the 1900s.
Well, I think we're going to have a big argument about this, because I think you're right. That was the case back in the 1910s and 1920s.
Nowadays,
all I get from people here in the UK is the Americans keep leaning on us. I'm talking about from the military too. So from the political circles, financial circles, military circles, and media circles.
The secret societies are the overwhelming strong arm of the whole system, and the British dominate the secret societies over America. That's what's going on.
Well, I'll tell you what, Albert Pike and Henry Kissinger, neither of them are British, and neither of them have operated.
No, but they're right there in bed with the Brits, right there with them. They're working together.
But I mean, this is getting a bit silly, George, because it's like a blame game here. But I think both are to blame. But we Brits are actually fairly independent minded, and we feel, particularly the military, feel constantly lent on through NATO by the Pentagon and by American interests. So, you know, I don't know if you think it's the British influencing the Pentagon to influence the British, and it's going kind of bouncing back across the Atlantic towards us, but I don't see it like that. I see the main influence here in the UK.
It's the Anglo-American Union or partnership that's been ruling.
Yeah, we could, you know, one thing we can agree on.
It's the two of us together, so it's not one independently of the other.
And also, let's not forget the Israelis, right? We're talking here about the
They took over England through Balfour and all that at the beginning of the 20th century. They started dominating England at that time.
Israeli interests certainly seem to be driving all of this. That is, you know, the Anglos on the
Empire. Israel exists to stabilize and to intimidate the oil producers. That's what I said was its main purpose, was to enforce the division of some of those countries into the oil companies' respective divisions, which were not natural divisions, but were arbitrary sometimes with straight lines. And so, Churchill needed that fuel, boiler fuel, for his warships. And so oil was very important to the Brits early on. They were right there in the oil play early in Iran and stuff like that, along with the Americans.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's quite clear that people like Cecil Rhodes and Milner at the
end of the
19th century, that's where this thing kicked off. But sure. I don't think it's centered here anymore. We've got a lot of, you know, problems, but many of them are from the European Union and the United States being caught between the two. I think there's definitely an attitude here in Britain, and we shall really see this, George, playing out with the way this bill goes, that they're attempting basically to have a police state bill go through Parliament. If it goes through, then we are really in trouble. That means we're going to have you know, the idea that you're using basically the government like a bunch of gangsters to kick and bully the poor, then there's going to be some serious civil unrest. And
we talked about who was behind that bill that consolidated the dominance of your media, and it was that labor leader, that woman, remember? And so that is more powerful law change than about anything I've seen lately to subdue and suppress free speech in the UK.
A lot of this is nothing to do with the law. It's all to do with the individuals who've been appointed to run these various organisations. I mean, we've got Rupert Murdoch in this amazing situation where, I mean, he's been the bane of my life as a journalist. You know, everyone hates Murdoch because he's completely destroyed the symbiosis between the printers and the journalists, the old unions in Fleet Street, which produced a very good, generally very, very good press. And what he did is he destroyed those in the 1980s, and everyone hated him. Now, what we've got is he's doing talk radio in Britain, which is brilliant. It's the best of all of the different radio stations that you can get. The BBC is hopeless. And in the US, he's doing Fox News, with the people like Steve Hilton on there.
Right, Steve Hilton is good, yeah.
Well, I mean, he's doing the best in the world, actually, investigation into the real origins of the virus, which nobody else seems to want to talk about.
Steve Hilton added that improper and illegal funding of it by Fauci a few weeks ago.
That's right.
That was around 2014-15, I think, and in cahoots with the University of North Carolina. And they sold it to the Wuhan lab at that time, 2015.
Well, who knows? Maybe this whole operation was masterminded by the Queen. And Porton Down in Wiltshire was the place
Kinetic Corporation. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, I certainly am. Yeah,
that's
of course.
The one they put in bed to take over Porton Down's primary, most valuable assets. And the Bushes were right there with the Crown on that deal.
Well, the Public Health England, which has been managing this pandemic, is run by guess who? One of the accountants from Paulson Biopharma. So, this is a privatized...
My personal theory is that it was an operation that outed the Wuhan virus, but it was directed towards taking down China. That's what I personally think was going on. And then the Chinese found out and started letting it go out to the West. As retaliation, that's what I think happened.
Yeah, but who knows where this thing was cooked up? It could have been made in the U.S. It could have been made in Britain, or it could have been made.
Well, we started out in the U.S. and sold to China, but they heightened it and increased it. It's deadliness, so, and infectiousness. I'm afraid with nanotechnology on airborne infection ability.
Yeah, but it's what it's done is it's provided this massive, long, extended system of lockdowns. It's provided.
Yes, it has. Yeah, yeah.
And that is really the prelude, I think, for a wider war. I think that's what we're going to be seeing, possibly even later this year, George. Is the whilst they're going to try and string out the lockdowns, the various attempts to keep the public quiet. But obviously, in Bristol, we're not having it. We're certainly not going to be quiet in Bristol. Nobody in Bristol is going to be sitting at home watching for the latest information on the television about COVID. They're out on the streets taking their country back because they're not interested in they don't believe them. And I think once the trust has been lost, whether it's through the press, through the government spokespeople or whatever, once the trust has been lost in the people, then they really are setting their own country on fire. They couldn't get anywhere in Syria. They hit a brick wall with the Russians, and then they've turned their attention on the domestic populations. And now it's time for those domestic populations to turn their attention on them.
Right, right. It's going to be a hellacious...
The kind of thing that's going to happen in the United States, I'm not sure. On the bigger picture, though, just because we've been looking into all sorts of stuff, we've had a couple of very sad deaths. One is of a guy called Ian R. Crane, who was the chair of the British UK 9/11 Truth Movement back in the mid-noughties and organised these alternative view conferences all around Britain. I would suggest all your listeners have a check out the alternative view because there's some fantastic stuff recorded, the presentations there. And then there was the death of a guy called Alan Watt as well, who was on the Alex Jones show from time to time. But
did he pass away?
He has, yeah, just 2 weeks ago.
I've interviewed him two or three times over the years.
Well, Alan did an amazing job, George, I think you'll agree, in his Cutting Through the Matrix program.
Yes, yes. He was out of Canada, and he was a fine person and stand-up person.
He was actually originally Scottish, of course.
Yeah.
Music industry. And I mean, he had a fantastic take on all of this, which was an ability to step back from it all, calmly explain how these plans are unfolding over not tens, not hundreds, but thousands of years. Amazing guy. And also the fact was he was a very quietly spoken, not like Alex Jones at all. In fact, almost a total and diametric.
Yeah, he was a very, very humble, quiet spoken person, a nice person. A nice guy. I liked it.
So, yeah, he died age 55, and there has to be questions over what happened, because I've tried to find out a bit more about it, and, there's no explanation, apparently. And the guy who was doing the YouTube film, which was put out, didn't seem like the kind of person who would be at all sympathetic. I mean, he was basically swearing, is quite rude and this sort of thing to people who are making comments about Alan and basically praising Alan, etc. And he was getting, using swear words. And I thought, this is something not quite right about this. You're more like a gatekeeper. So I would suggest something dodgy has happened there. I know he died suddenly, only age 55. He was born in 19. Yeah, so he was only 55 when he died. He was born in 1965. And some of the stuff he'd been doing was a brilliant analysis of the pandemic and explaining just how this, he'd always predicted that something like this would be used. He was one of the few of us, George, who was well ahead of the game and saying, oh, they're going to use a pandemic to do this sort of thing because you can't, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, you don't know. You're not a scientist. You can't see. And so this is the sort of thing they'll do. So very sad to hear of his passing. But also we got a bit of news about Rudolf Hess as well, and the strange flight of Rudolf Hess over to Britain in the 10th of May 1941. He was the Deputy Führer. And John Harris is an author on the subject, and he has dug out some information which is pretty explosive, saying that he believes that Prince George, who was King George the VI's brother, he was waiting at a RAF airfield just near Troon in Scotland for him that night. And that, Hess missed, he was trying to navigate visually, but he managed to, go the wrong way, and it was too dark when he got, to a certain point. So he got lost, and that's why he had to bail out. So he was actually, he believes, aiming for this RAF airfield, which was very little used at that time in the war. But he believes that that Prince George was waiting there in secret for him, and that they were going to try and negotiate to have a coup against Winston Churchill. Well, it's very unlikely that coup would have taken place, because it could have taken place without Rudolf Hess quite easily.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it was almost certainly just a ruse to lure Hess over to Britain, and of course the main object of it all being to free up Martin Bormann, who'd been Hess's assistant, to then become the personal assistant, the private secretary to Adolf Hitler and the treasurer of the Nazi party. So this was a very important move, in that it put Bormann in that key position, who was working with Winston Churchill's private secretary, Desmond Morton, in order to basically control Hitler for the closing stages of the war, and then also bring all the looted money from the whole of Europe over to Britain at the end of World War II. So it was very important to get rid of Hitler's other friends who might stand between Bormann and Hitler. So that was, I think, why it happened. But it's also interesting to hear what John's been digging out, even all this time later, about the close connections to the royal family being involved in luring Hess over to the UK in 1941.
Well, that's fascinating, Tony. Boy, that is great. You know, it's great research.
Yeah, anyway, so John Harris's book is coming out, I think it's later this year. But he's done a whole series, and they're all very good. And he is one of those people who's just doggedly going and going until he gets to the truth. And the current Duke of Kent will not reply to his letters, you know, so that says everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, George. So anyway, my show is a weekly show. I do a weekly show at thisweek.org.uk. People can pick up stuff there about what's going on in Bristol. Obviously, we'll be covering this next week, but we cover regularly the protest, and there's going to be another protest apparently on Tuesday in the city by travellers against these new laws, because the Brits are not going to take this lying down, George.
Boy, I tell you what, you're doing great, Tony. You've really done some in-depth reporting over the years. You're just a number one in my book.
I do feel like I'm a bit at the epicenter here, because this is the center. Bristol and the southwest of England is at the center of the kind of alternative culture in the country. You know, where we've had the tradition of festivals going back right to the year dot, and it's a nice part of the world. It's usually very hot and warm in the summer, and so that is one of the things that the globalists, the New World Order, want to stop, is any kind of independent fun. And, you know, you cannot get more fun than a nice weekend or week-long summer festival in the west of England.
Oh, man, I might have to come over. Well, anyway, well, thank you for all your in-depth reporting. Appreciate it.
Okay, George, no problem. God bless. Speak to you soon.
Okay, God bless. Bye-bye.